Warning. 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 Warning.
You will not be held responsible for any impairments or damage caused by excessive exposure to the following.
Warning, the system has become unstable.
Power failure detected.
S6K Media presents Impact Arena Radio.
Podcasting on Podomatic, so you can hear us whenever you want.
Go to www.s6k.com/impact to join our revolution.
Genre spectrum, industrial, experimental, punk, new wave, goth, techno, breakbeat, jungle, and more. Featuring experts in media subversion, Daryl Hell, Def KD, Sonic Warriors United, and Magic Sound Butcher.
Prepare yourself. You've never heard radio like this.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what you can do for your country. Ask what your country can do for you.
Login accepted. Now initializing.
You asked me once what was in room 101. I told you that you knew already. Everyone knows.
Magic Sound Butcher.
Future by Lotzig Benthouse.
When you cut into the present, the future leaks out.
So you can't do it, you jerk.
U.S. Forces by Midnight Oil. Music by these new Puritans. Child Soldier by Oniotrix Point Never.
Take.
Hell Nation by the Dead Kennedys.
Let's protect it while we can. That's all there is, and there ain't no more.
Hell is a back of duties for the nuclear freeze. So you have no one cares, you've got the chance to freeze. Hell is an afternoon for the minimum wage. So take care of the murder when it stands to the trade.
And this hell is a hell is a hell is a
Asylum, Permanent Underclass, by Dalek.
Keep status quo, carry big stick, but speak in low tones. ever listened to and learned from our bloodstained prophet.
And use this tongue to combat.
Liberator by Spear of Destiny.
Ah!
Revolution Action by Atari Teenage Riot. Civilized by Pitch Shifter.
I don't understand. don't understand.
Project where we are debriefed by cultural and artistic agenda setters. You are now prompted to access information from this location.
In this edition of Scant, Part 2 goes even deeper into the history of industrial music with Controlled Bleeding's Paul Lemos. We discuss the two lives of Paul, and his perspectives about music appreciation, from a generational point of view. We begin with Paul talking about Controlled Bleeding, and how they are perceived by modern industrial culture.
It's been strange, you know, like our band seems to be completely forgotten among most of, you know, the kids that we play to these days.
It's interesting, I was just talking about this the other day on Facebook. I think that because we all came out of the prog rock world and being influenced by all that stuff and all these amazing musicians, and so we were into eclecticism, but also this kind of amazing virtuosity within that eclecticism. And now a lot of the people who are writing what is now considered industrial music, most of them are writing to a grid. So that's the reason why I believe the 4/4 kick, what I call the eclectic electronic polka, it becomes so dominant within the genre.
You see, I don't know anything about the genre or industrial music at all. I'll be honest with you, Darryl. I mean, I pretty much abandoned all that had to do with, you know, shortly after Roadrunner. I mean, so I haven't really followed that at all. I've been much more interested, you know, in other that's not been a part of anything that I've been related to for a long time.
Interesting. So, could you talk about
I don't know anything about it?
Could you talk about some of the other bands that you've been playing with over the past, you know, 10 years or so?
Well, you know, I mean, we've only started. Both of my band members died within a short time of each other, so we hadn't really played live, you know, before that. You know, these guys passed away a couple of years ago, but we hadn't really played live at all with, you know, Control Bleeding per se as it was for a long, long time. So I just started playing live again with my old drummer, you know, just as a very visceral kind of, you know, I mean, it's got nothing to do with industrial music. It's closer to a band maybe like Lightning Bolt, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just two-piece that just very, very physically, you know, physical music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a guitar player in this. It's with a drummer. We use a bass looper, and it's just very direct. You know, I guess it's kind of like, it almost goes back to the, you know, like the beginnings where I had begun, you know, the stuff that I was playing at CB's back in, you know, 1979 or whatever. But, you know, I think it's closer in aesthetic to, you know, like bands maybe like Arab on Radar and Lightning Bolt and some of those bands that I've been inspired by. Like, I love Arab on Radar. For me was, you know, one of the great bands of the past 20 years. You know, I just thought they were brilliant.
Can you speak about them to people who might not know who they are?
I don't know, they're just a little band from Providence that just played the most angular, twisted friggin', you know, music I've ever heard, but always, always so tightly rehearsed and so tightly focused, you know, and wound down. They were just, you know, you have to hear, like, Soap the Saddle. They got another band, because one of the guitar players, I think, departed, so they reformed as a band called Doomsday Student, and I love them equally, you know. I mean, they're playing around now, and if you can see them, just see them. But yeah, it's very kind of harsh, angular, but you know, extremely rhythmic, you know, kind of primal, throbbing dissonance. It's just a real din, but the whole thing is just such a physical, you know, physical show. But I mean, I love Dillinger Escape Plan, you know, early on too. I thought that they were just like, you know, the most brutal band I'd seen in, you know, maybe 25 years when they were in their prime.
Mm-hmm.
Had you ever seen those guys?
No.
Oh my God. Holy Christ. You know, just what a visceral performance. But, you know, meanwhile, playing music that I couldn't even understand. I mean, just so technically blinding, all at 100 miles an hour when these guys, you know, are in the audience and the whole fucking audience is on the stage and the monitors are being, you know, thrown all over the place.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just the most, you know, just the most raging kind of performance that, yeah, totally spoke to me. You know, spoke to me kind of in a way that industrial music hadn't spoken to me since way before it was about beats and stuff. I mean, I relate much more to, like, the primal scream of, like, really, really early Neubauten. But I never really related too much to the more rhythmic or industrial stuff. You know, even though we made that music, it was never a comfortable place for me to be.
That's really interesting that you mention Neubauten, because the thing that prompted that, the discussion on Facebook that I was talking about, one of our friends had posted the video for Einstürzen, Autobahn. Let's go to, have you been touring, or are you just doing one-off shows?
Mainly one-off shows, you know. I mean, touring might consist of playing three shows in a row, like, you know, maybe, you know, Boston and, you know, Philly and New York, but no, we can't tour yet. I mean, in the summertime, we'll hopefully stretch out a little bit. And, you know, the guy I work with, too, you know, he's in the manholes in New York City working for the phone company. So it's kind of like neither one of us are in a situation where we can pick up and leave for a month. You know, we'll go over in May to play the Broken Flag Fest over in the UK. And, you know, so we, like, you know, hop around a little bit, but we can't tour yet. And I'm hoping, though, that in the summer we'll actually maybe be able to get out and do, like, 9 or 10 shows in a row. Yeah, but this thing can't tour.
Well, it's interesting that when you started, you had your job that then allowed you to be free from the industry dictates. You flirted with the industry a little bit, and then you went back to what you do. So can you speak to how you see your freedom in the industry or as an artist to create, or to free create, as Noam Chomsky would say, without the arbitrary limiting effects of coercive institutions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I just always have done what I do, so I don't really think about those factors. You know, I just make what I make, and, you know, I issue it where I can find somebody that will put it out and do a pretty responsible job. So, I mean, I still think that what we do is way far away from the industry in general, you know. You know, like the last recording we did went out through Solomon, you know, and it came out on hard copy and in a digital format. But, you know, it's become just so hard to sell anything. And maybe it's just the lack of interest, too, in what we do, because maybe the group is kind of, you know, passe in some people's minds. But I just think, you know, it doesn't really have much to do with the industry. And if you want to try and get it into the mainstream a little bit, into mainstream publications or whatever, it costs a tremendous amount of money to, you know, hire publicists and all that shit, you know, radio people. I mean, it's a really, you know, it's a tough endeavor to put out a record and have it noticed now. I also think, you know, just the flood of product that's always coming at people digitally and, you know, even in hard copy. I mean, there's still so many, you know, recordings released every month. You know, how do you get anything to surface? So I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, it's changed in that, you know, there's just such a constant flood of material to compete with. But, you know, we, as far as playing, as far as what I want out of the music, it's still pretty much, you know, my own personal, you know, taste that dictated, and I put out, you know, stuff that's as obscure as it's ever been, and the people that are interested in it, you know, they find it, I think, as it's always been. I don't think it's that different. I just think that the buying audience is much smaller now for what we're doing. As far as, like, you know, what the industry dictates, I don't know. I mean, that's never really been that too much of a factor, you know, for music like this.
Now you're creating music without the partners that you had created with for years. Did you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, what is wisdom? I guess wisdom is just, you know, being banged up by life enough so that you really understand the nature of it and the passing of it, and you can look back in retrospect and, you know, understand how brief it is and, you know, put things into a perspective that you can't when you're younger, you know? Like, I mean, I thought I had all the time in the world with my bandmates, and then suddenly, you know, they were gone. So I don't know. I mean, for a young artist, I would just say, like, if I could go back and relive my early 20s or my mid-20s, maybe I would have said, yeah, just you know, take the risk and you know, do the thing that you want to do and give it a shot for, you know, as intensely as you can for a certain number of years. And then if it doesn't work out, then you start maybe looking at your alternatives. But yeah, I think that my one regret is maybe that I wasn't more adventurous, you know, that maybe I didn't pick up and live in Europe and create the way I wanted to, not worrying about, you know, security of the paycheck. And, you know, that's something that I didn't really understand, that probably I could do easier than it seems to me now. You know, when I was younger, I probably could have done it, you know, pretty easily. But then in some ways, you know, like the job that I got, like I said, you know, really kind of a stabilizing existence, stabilizing force. So I don't know where I would have ended up without it. It's so tough, but yeah, I just think, you know, just kind of, I would say that people should be maybe a little bit more adventurous when they're younger, when they've got the time in front of them to do it, you know, as opposed to worrying too much about the security of it all.
Do you think now, because of our old culture, it was a really grassroots effort? Hey, I can go in my studio, I can record, I can upload, I can do it all without ever going out, pressing any flesh, going to any shows, or whatever.
Well, you know, it's strange, though, what you're saying, because I think in some ways, when we were younger doing this, you know, when there was no digital age, I think it was easier in some ways to get noticed as opposed to harder, you know? I mean, you'd go out, you know, you'd put up posters, and there weren't these limits in the city where you couldn't post to the walls and stuff. It just was a more kind of seemingly, maybe a little bit more liberal time or whatever when the city was, you know, a lot crustier. And yeah, you'd go and you'd meet people and you'd network in a human way, and there wasn't nearly as much, you know, like the only reason that maybe a control bleeding could have been noticed, you know, doing noise work or whatever, like with Knees and Bones in our early recordings, was just because there weren't that many bands out there that were putting out, you know, vinyl documents of this stuff, you know, so the competition was much more limited. Whereas now, even though kids can do everything in their bedroom, there's just, you know, every kid that's doing something is doing it, you know, so there's just this gigantic flood of people that are competing for maybe, you know, others' attention. And so I think what happens is the yourself, you know, by yourself, and you can have, you know, however many, you know, friends on your Facebook page and however many hits on your, you know, YouTube video, but that doesn't really translate into much when it comes to people actually, you know, picking your music up and focusing on it and knowing it or coming to your performance. Yeah, I don't think that those two things necessarily, you know, correspond. So I think it's much tougher now.
Interesting. Now, if we drill down into that, do you think the idea that we came out of the album rock days, and as you were mentioning, the idea of high fidelity versus hearing most things in MP3 form, firstly, and then secondly, through earbuds?
Well, I think a lot of the experience that, you know, we would consider kind of, you know, the essence of something, you know, that we treasure has been lost. But like you say, you know, with every generation, you know, there's a completely different sense of what's the norm. And so, you know, like, you know, a lot of kids, that, you know, they look at the speakers that I have, these big, you know, with big woofers and these big speakers, and, you know, that's just so archaic to them. It's so ridiculous, you know, and actually using a CD player and playing actual CDs, how ridiculous, you know, they could put my whole record collection of, you know, 20,000 CDs on what, you know, a single iPod, maybe, you know. But I just think, yeah, to, you know, the experience is different. I won't say better or worse because it's, you know, it's really relative. But
sure.
I definitely think that coming from a much more album rock orientation, you know, that aesthetic among, you know, young kids, like real young kids, like high school kids, and, you know, maybe some kids in college, I think that is pretty much lost, you know. I mean, you still have, you know, your purists, but there are few among them.
Since you grew up in the New York area, I believe that you would have remembered N.E.W. What do you think that experience did to you as an enthusiast of music?
You know, I was never really big for radio because they weren't playing, you know, the things that I was interested in, really ever. You know, I mean, I always kind of liked, you know, college radio, NYU, you know, stuff like that, you know, Columbia, stuff like that. But still, you know, I always enjoyed, or for many years enjoyed, you know, going, sitting down and listening to, you know, a whole album, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway in its entirety, you know what I mean, or Lox, Tongues, and Aspic in its entirety. So yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was really looking at the artist's work, you know, in the whole vision of what maybe somebody was trying to communicate, whereas, you know, I don't think that necessarily is important to most commercial, you know, music buyers today. You know, they're more interested in particular songs, and, you know, there doesn't have to be any kind of, you know, movement from one to the next, or, you know, there's no requirement for any kind of, you know, thematic orientation. But, you know, it's a funny thing, too, because there are a lot of, you know, hardcore bands, you know, like, I'm looking at some CDs that my students loan me, like a band called I'm the Ghost, or, you know, these bands that are semi-hardcore that Epitaph is putting out,
mm-hmm.
and they're, you know, they're thematic works, and it's just different than what we know. You know, I don't relate to their music, but it's still something that's part of, you know, music culture. Just, you probably have to look for it, you know what I mean? So
sure.
It's really hard for me to generalize. I mean, it depends. For me, I've always enjoyed, you know, the continuity of, you know, listening to an artist's work that I admire, you know, from beginning to end, to kind of, you know, maybe, you know, just to see what that vision might be. But, you know, I don't know if there's any relevance, you know, overall. It's like anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the world changes, and so, you know, certain things just fall by the wayside. I don't know. I mean, for me, the experience is different than for kids, you know, coming to music now that are more, you know, like, put their, you know, player in shuffle mode. I don't know. I mean, I think what's happened is my attention span has become so shortened, you know, in modern culture, that I don't listen like that anymore. I listen a song, and then I pop another song on my CD player, and then pop, 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 you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think attention spans all around have just become much more limited.
What's that experience like after you play a show and then you go back into your classroom?
I mean, I work at a, like I said, a Catholic school. There, you know, there have been some guys that have been in, you know, cover bands, and even some guys that have done, you know, original music, but, you know, very kind of commercial, maybe, you know, like Long Island bar oriented nature. So I don't really have too much in common with people that I work with. I mean, I like the people I work with, but artistically, you know, I don't really have too much that I can bond. interaction with my peers, I've always thought was kind of mundane. You know, it's just, I think kids live a much more intense life. You know, everything is kind of, you know, at this point in their lives is just kind of, you know, exciting and it's new. You know, the experience of driving and whatever else, it's all new. Whereas, you know, most of my peers, you know, they're more interested in, you know, like the faucets they're going to put, you know, in the bathroom this weekend. I just think a lot of the vitality is, you know, lost as you get older. So I'm kind of one of the very few people, probably my age, that really keeps my ear to the ground and is still participating, you know, actively in the stuff that I've always loved. I mean, I just do what always has driven me, you know. So I don't have the house and the pool and, you know, the two children at home and all that stuff like most of them do. I still live probably, you know, as they would think, you know, somebody that, you know, living like a kid, somebody that's never grown up. So, you know, I'm not sure I really relate to my peers.
Well, how about, let's speak about the students then.
You can understand the Catholic school, too. You know, you're dealing with not that many aggro kids. You know, you're dealing with a lot of kids that, believe it or not, you know, really like Justin Bieber, you know, and, you know, like similar music, you know, fairly harmless music. So, you know, they don't really, like, I don't make my music part of my schoolwork. Like, most of the kids that are in school probably, you know, they probably heard that I'm in something, you know, they see stuff on the internet. But they don't really bother me too much about it because it's so beyond their understanding or their interest, you know what I mean? They see it as kind of, you know, probably some kind of, you know, quirkiness or some kind of abnormality or maybe something that, like, old people would be interested in. It's just kind of far from their experience. But then, you know, you have a few kids that, you know, like, are aware of what's going on in Brooklyn and maybe, you know, are into a little more avant-garde thing. And, you know, so, you know, sometimes they want to engage in conversation and, you know, talk a little bit about that. But it's pretty much separate from my own existence. And I, you know, I mean, what kids like is what they like, you know what I mean? And so I'm always interested in hearing, you know, what they're listening to. And I don't relate to most of what most of the kids in my school listen to. I think is, you know, kind of ordinary, but yeah, you know, there's always a few kids that, you know, that keep their ear to the ground and that you can, you know, relate to. But yeah, my musical life and my teaching life are very separate.
And does that feel schizophrenic to you?
Never has, no. You know, they're just two different activities that don't necessarily or maybe shouldn't necessarily overlap.
That was the second part of our discussion with Controlled Bleeding's Paul Lemos. Next week, issue 17 will feature Daryl Hell in room 101. His reprogramming initiative is codenamed Transmissions from the Battleship. Next week's scan segment will feature part one of our two-part conversation with one of the most revolutionary people to ever serve in the American Congress, former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney.
If you are not currently listening from our website, visit us so you can follow our podcasts, get playlists, and complete program information. Go to www.s6k.com/impact and join our revolution.
Stay hard, stay real, stay involved. And we'll see you next week.
Compact Arena Radio. Podcasting on Podomatic, so you can hear us whenever you want.
Go to www.s6k.com/impact to join our revolution.
Shutdown initiated.